We have a couple people from the Benton County Commission. Jeffrey Condit. Condit.
Writing.
And a Barbara Rohr. Can you testify? Is it Barbara?
Barbara Ross. I think Barbara and I have different
separate testimonies.
So okay, so you might not want to come up together. Okay.
Right. Copy the bill.
Members of the committee, my name is Jeffrey G. Condit, and I am the Assistant County Counsel for Benton County. I'm here representing Benton County Commissioners Dale Schrock and Charlene Carr. We oppose the amendments to SB 237 submitted by Agriculture for Oregon. In general, we believe the goal is admirable, but the vehicle is dreadful. We feel that each change suggested will spawn 10 times the problems that it purportedly will solve, and that together these changes add up to a major change in the agricultural lands goal that would be a disaster for local governments to have to administer. The standards proposed by these amendments are unworkable and vague, and hence an invitation to litigation. Although I know that we're short on time and I won't analyze all the provisions, I will touch on the ones we feel are the most difficult. The marginal lands definition has three legs. In order to be marginal land, the parcel in question must have produced less than a certain level of income and either must be in an area where 70% of the parcels are under 20 acres or on land falling below SCS capability class 4 and forest site index 50. Only this last standard has anything whatsoever to do with the capability of the land to be used for agricultural uses. It's most likely for this reason that
Senator Roberts?
It seems to me you started off on the first statement that's incorrect. I am looking here at in these amendments that it doesn't have anything to do with the value that the proposed marginal land produced.
It says that marginal land, in 13, that's page 2, line 7, says marginal land is land outside areas designated for urban development or rural residential use on comprehensive plans approved, which was not a contributing part of a farm operation which produced 20,000 or more
gross
sales.
That part, to be designated as marginal land, was not a contributing part of another farm which produced less than 20,000. So it doesn't have to do with the productivity of that specific.
Exactly. That's the point I'm making, that it does not have anything to do with
productivity. Oh, I thought you said that there was a measure of its productivity.
Well,
I'm saying that there is no reference to a measure of its productivity. And I may be bad or good. My point was that I thought that you were misstating the terms.
I'm sorry, Ross, I didn't make myself clear, Senator. I was saying that
he's trying to talk too fast.
Yes, I'm sorry, I'll slow down.
Take your time a little bit.
The thing I was saying is that only that last part about the capability class 4 inside class 50 is the only part that has anything to do with productivity on that certain piece of land. And I was going to say it's probably for this reason that LCDC, in its Goal 3 administrative rule, has specifically rejected income tests and statewide minimum lot sizes for determining whether a parcel is productive agricultural land. In their agricultural lands goal, LCDC mandates, quote, profitability and gross farm income shall not be considered in determining whether land is agricultural land, unquote. It goes on to state that, quote,
I ask it,
Senator Roberts?
Hasn't that been one of the major objections made to that goal, was that it classified some land as agricultural when it couldn't produce enough to make it productive for agricultural purposes? Is that idea of not considering whether or not land is useful for agricultural purposes from the standpoint of making money, are you saying that it's desirable not to use that measure?
Well, I think what the present Goal 3 administrative rule does now looks to what is actually grown on that parcel and looks to see how it goes into the farm markets to determine whether it's useful for agricultural use. This takes an arbitrary income number and uses that number to determine whether this is productive farmland or not. And I'm saying, and they said, I think, that this is not a proper way of looking to see whether these are productive because of the vagueness of this type of income standard. They also state in their Rule 3 administrative rule that Goal 3 does not require a minimum lot size. Needs for agricultural acreage vary from large wheat ranches to small intensive farming ranch or operations. A specific minimum lot size adopted at state level would be impractical. I think this would go to that 20 acres or less, 70% of the parcels being 20 acres or less. It's confusing off the top, and I also think that it doesn't make enough consideration for the individual counties and the situations that may happen in the individual counties. I think that considering the expertise and experience of LCDC, this committee should think long and hard before adopting criteria for deciding whether agricultural land is marginal or not that have been rejected by LCDC as inappropriate for doing so. In the new and improved exclusive farm use zone, we are especially in Benton County appalled by the provision which permits a farmer to recover costs and attorney fees from the county if he obtains a court order stating that dwellings provided in conjunction with farm use are not in fact being used for that purpose. It would be forcing the county to be responsible in perpetuity for something that it really has no control over once it has granted. Imagine this scenario. The county grants a farm-related dwelling on a 100-acre parcel. 2 years down the road, this parcel is sold to another person who works in town, lives in the residence, and leases the farm acreage. The dwelling thus is no longer in conjunction with farm use. The owner gets sued, and the county gets stuck. Further, the non-conforming dwelling remains. There's no provision in there for dealing with what happens to that non-conforming dwelling. As a result of this provision, nothing gets solved, guiltless homeowners get harassed, lawyers get rich, and county taxpayers are left holding the bag, either for cost or for attorney fees and seeking indemnity. One final point. It has been 8 years since the adoption of Rule 3. After many planning acknowledgments and court rulings and LUBA determinations and the administrative rule, the requirements and restrictions of the agricultural goal are finally assuming a point of relative clarity. Adoption of these amendments represents significant changes in the present system that would throw the whole area back into chaos. One of the most oft-heard complaints against the land use system is that the goalposts keep moving. These amendments not only move the goalposts, they change the rules of the game. We submit that it would be rash of this committee or the Legislative Assembly to adopt such sweeping changes without the benefit of strict DLC scrutiny and much greater citizen involvement. While we believe that the amendments merit defeat on their face, at the very least, I think the spirit of Goal 1 and RS 197 demand that such major changes to Goal 3 should go through the LCDC Goal Amendment process.
Senator Roberts?
The sponsors of these amendments... My understanding is recognized one of these other statements that you've made, and on page 5, line 15 and line 17, the word dwelling would be struck, and the word mobile home would be inserted. So we don't have the kind of objection you're making with reference to some decision being made at one time and then it in perpetuity. Being a possible basis for a lawsuit. I know that doesn't remove all of your objections, but I think that you'll see that it...
Well, that would certainly relieve me to a great extent about that provision. I would only point out that the county has its own enforcement proceedings for going. We do review our hardship-granted mobile homes every periodic. I believe it's 1 year, but I don't quote
this
me on
probably
that.
Wouldn't raise any problem for you then.
Well, I don't want to say that. I think...
By your testimony, it would seem to reflect your present practice.
Yes, I don't think that would relieve a lot of my concerns about this section. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Barbara Ross, Commissioner Ross.
Did we interrupt the inquiry with anything?
No.
Yes.
No, we're finished, weren't we?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I appreciate your letting me testify so that I can get back to... it is true that I do not support the testimony just given by the Assistant County Counsel, but my testimony is not in rebuttal to his, or I did just want to mention one fairly narrow area of the
Excuse me
bill.
Just a moment.
Yes.
Could you identify yourself?
I'm Barbara Ross. I am one of the other Benton County Commissioners. I'm here speaking for myself.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
We just have
fine.
To put that on the record. Thank you.
I'm wanting to speak on a pretty narrow issue, just to give my point of view on that, and that is on the standing issue. And I understand that this is also being addressed by the House Committee, and that you will be working with them. This bill calls, I believe, for any owner of a farm to be able to challenge a decision made, to be able to appeal a decision made. And that's on page 12, lines 3 and 4 in the bill. My position is that I think it is important that we allow adequate opportunity for all kinds of citizens to appeal land use decisions. I think that it's important that we have a mechanism that provides for a speedy and reasonable decision that can be made so that people can go on about their business and can proceed to make their decisions relating to their own land. I don't think this effort is enhanced by very narrowly limiting the types of people that can appeal. Because if you do that, I think what results is people having very contrived basis for standing, and then you spend long periods in litigation about whether people have standing or not, rather than getting to the basic issues of the case, getting a decision, and moving on. And in talking with people around the state, I think that where plans have been adopted, that they are having fewer appeals, and that they are moving in a more orderly way to get decisions made on a local level.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
Well, I don't think there's any question, Mr. Ross, on what you have an acknowledged plan, except that the problem is a lot of the complaint, particularly when you're going through gathering a plan, is that certain folks lay in the weeds and wait until they get up to LCDC before they even surface. Do they go down and sit in some planning commission meetings or go out in the towns where they're trying to do the planning and listen to it, and then all of a sudden they sashay in with their portfolio and file an appeal? And I got news for you. I've got a county and a few of us living right here that are just fed up with it, just fed up to our ears with it.
And I certainly don't blame you for that type of behavior, and I have no objection to the House recommendation that people be required to participate on a local level.
Okay.
I think that's a good provision.
Okay.
The part that I do object to is construing the standing very narrowly to say that you have to live within very close proximity to the affected property, or that you have to have a very substantial financial interest. Land use laws are made for all of us. They do need to be enforced, and we have an enforcement problem.
Let me ask you a question. How would you feel about the provision, if we follow that prescription you're given, the provision that someone that does appeal, that they post a bond? And if someone faces damage as a result of their appeal and the person appealing doesn't prevail, do you think they should forfeit their bond on that type of appeal if they injure that other person?
Well, I really have no objection to some kind of financial commitment. I'm not sure exactly what form it should take, but I think that a financial commitment is much more palatable than always having only the people who have a personal axe to grind being the only type of people that can say, are we going to enforce our laws?
And so sometimes you get in a chicken yard fight.
You bet. Sure.
And if you get a chicken yard fight, if they post a bond, it slaps a lot of the nonsense.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
Thank you.
And I think the point
I shouldn't describe it as chicken yard fight, but that's the way I've always kind of described someone, right, what they're out there just kind of meddling, and it's kind of fun to go. It isn't any fun if you own the property and you have an investment.
So. That's absolutely right. And I think one of the reasons this is important is because of the point that you made earlier, that some of our local elected officials around the state have not been adequately enforcing state law. And we do have to have some type of check and balance system, and we can't let that lay only with the people who have a personal financial interest. We have to have a door open to some other people who can say, by the way, you guys are not following state law, and there is a recourse. Good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the chance to be before you.
Thank you very much.
I want to say, I hate to see you describe yourself as one of the other commissioners. You're one of the commissioners. And I'm glad to have you. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Have a... trying to get people who are the farthest away. Michael Horton from Coburg.
Mr. Chairman, as you've already announced, so that they understand, is that we intend to, with these amendments, we're probably going to have work sessions. I understand we're going to have another hearing,
yes,
so that some that are here, if they miss out, will have correct. Another opportunity. So if some came in late, they don't know.
That's correct. Welcome. Would you identify yourself, please?
Thank you. My name is Michael Horton, and 90541 Smith Lane. It's a Eugene address, but it's Coburg. It's down in the Coburg Bottom Loop, which is some of the best farmland you can find anywhere in the state, subject to a great deal of the parcelization for much the same reason as Senator Day pointed out a while ago. The county commissioners have a rubber stamp down there. They just whack those things. Now, the seven applications that I've sat in on, seven of them down there, they approved them all. We appealed six of them to the state, subsequently prevailed. It's really a travesty. The gravel company, Wilder, sat here a little while ago and told you they opposed the provisions on gravel because, of course, Wilder owns nothing but prime aggregate land down there. They own it right next to me. And so, of course, they don't want to do that because that's where they already are. It's big money for them. And yet, as Mr. Funk pointed out a while ago, the Springfield Quarry charges less for gravel than those who dig it out of these areas along the river. And so I think that there's something there that's really valuable in terms of an incentive to save the farmland by reason of putting a priority on use of those other lands that are not best for agricultural first. I would like to see that happen. I would further like to point out that I don't know too much about how it is in Benton County, but I can tell you the enforcement procedures in Lane County are nothing but a charade. We have a situation down there with a gravel operator who produced off and on over the years some gravel off of his place, finally got a permit after being kind of pressured into doing it. When the permit expired, kept extracting. We finally ended up having to get injunctions to stop it. We had a lawsuit over a decision that Lane County made at the time that the Wildish land next to mine was approved, based on the fact that their original permit was for loan only and they were digging all kinds of stuff out of there. There just really isn't any effective procedure for regulating these things on a local level. God only knows where we'd be if we couldn't appeal to LCDC, to be frank with you. The planners down there on the rural papers, the overall plans for the rural areas that are now being reviewed because they were disapproved the first time, told me that they were going to approve or recommend for ratification all existing zoning in the area, and that they intended to do this because they didn't want to rock the boat and because of budget considerations. It really doesn't have anything to do with whether this land is best used for agriculture or not. It has to do with what's the easiest route out. And I'll give you an example. The Lane County Aggregate and Mineral Resource Working Paper acknowledges that three times the land is already zoned as projected needed under the most optimistic growth projections in Lane County for gravel, and that paper was issued in February of 1982. Since that time, I've sat through hearings down there that approved an additional 600 acres. Now, I don't know how much gravel is needed. I'm not a professional planner in that regard, but I can read their own papers, and the paper clearly designates or acknowledges that that much in excess is already approved, and here they are, they're coming in there now, and they're going to set all this in concrete and recommend it in terms of the plans for these rural areas, regardless of the fact and the manner in which this stuff was originally designated, and they're just going to say, let's go ahead and let these boys go with it. And be frank with you, you know, owning farmland, having paid big money to drill wells, it's scary to me when I come up here and talk to these hydrologists who tell me that where these guys are willing to dig is right on the line of my aquifers, and that I'm not going to really have anything to say about this. And they don't even need to dig there. They don't even need to dig in that land. And if they did, they've got three times as much zoning already out of the year ago February as they need by the year 2000. It doesn't make sense. There's no teeth in that enforcement procedure, of course, with respect to those areas that are designated. They're furthermore, isn't any adequate notice procedures to start with. I'll give you an example of that, too. We had a hearing down there. My entire area is zoned EFU, excepting for those areas that are S&G, sand and gravel. Well, we didn't hear about the fact that there was one party a little further up who didn't really care to farm, who had applied for a gravel zone. Now, that party's about a half a mile from my place. So the county, of course, realized that this was a little bit too blatant. They had a lot of opposition from people who had heard about it. By the time I heard about it, they had zoned this one parcel in the middle of all of this FF20, because under FF20, they can have a conditional use for gravel. And so now we're locked into a situation where we weren't notified adequately in advance. They didn't even bother to tell the city of Coburg, even though it's directly on the haul route. They didn't tell anybody around there that really has a vested interest in the area in a manner, because all I have to do is tell them 100 feet away or if they're abutting owners. So we didn't hear about this. You cannot go down to the county and get yourself on a subscription list, even if you're willing to pay for the service of being notified for these things. You cannot go down there and ask that those areas that are within your immediate area you be notified of, or those things that are within your immediate interest be notified of. They won't do it. They won't even do it if you offer to pay them for it. They talk about budget things, but they won't even let you pay them for this service. The intent is to keep this as down and without as much public notice as possible. It's the only thing they can conclude. Because I've had this problem for years in going to these hearings. And I've participated in this process and watched it. We had one hearing down there that included a wildish land where we had this single land for almost 9 months where they applied for this gravel zoning, and these fellows sat there and offered to compromise because they knew they didn't have a leg to stand on with meeting all of this. But in the end, this thing went on and on and on. The engineer's report, all of this stuff came back and said that they didn't need all this land, that some of it was best used for agriculture. And in the end, though, they gave them the whole thing. 435 acres right adjoining. They didn't even delete a single parcel because it was useful for agriculture. They just went rubber stamp across the whole thing. And it really was disgusting. Because at one point, the gravel company had offered to compromise, and then later on, they found out that it was Bob Wood that was the swing vote, and the man ultimately was proven to be unreliable, you know. It was just a real problem. I think that my key objection in this bill is that, with respect to the wording in it, I noticed over and over again, it says substantial compliance. The problem is they already aren't. You give them a loophole like that that they can drive a truck through, and you're just never going to even have a hope. The thing's already a joke. Even with the law the way it is, they don't enforce it. You give them something like that, and you might as well just forget it. And so I'd really appreciate that if you do review this thing and you do come up with some kind of a bill, that those regulations that affect to enforcing tighter gravel restrictions and those things that will cause them to actually enforce the laws that sit and to not approve these rural plans which rubber stamp way in excess of the needs for the area would be something that I'd be very much appreciative of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ford. It's 5 o'clock. I promised the committee members that we would end at 5. For those of you who were not here earlier, we are going to have what I can now call a catch-our-breath work session on Monday. It's not going to be a work session where we're going to sit down and start making language decisions or anything like that. All of the proposed amendments that we have been referred to Legislative Council. We will be getting an engrossed version of that, and it will be available to the public probably by Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. If you would like a copy of that, please sign on the yellow pad over here by our clerk. My apologies for those of you who are from out of town that we still did not get to, but we tried our best, and we'll be having another hearing week after next, and at least one more hearing before a work session. There will be public notice of that, and otherwise, if there's no other business before the committee...
No, Mr. Chairman, if I just mention, I would have a conceptual set of amendments. amendments. I won't have them completely drafted, but a conceptual form of what I'm talking about on Monday, so that there's an opportunity to look at that as well.
Okay. Anything else? The committee's adjourned.